This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. A number of years ago, writer Nancy Peacock was on an early morning walk in the dark, waiting to watch the sunrise. She'd not been writing recently and was really not sure whether she wanted to go on writing. But suddenly it came to her, a sentence that would become the opening line of a novel. "I've been to hangings before, but never my own." She went home, wrote the line down, and soon enough started writing again. And that line became the premise for her novel, The Life and Times of Persimmon Wilson. It tells the story of a slave-turned-Comanche warrior who's trying to write a record of his own life before he's hanged. Nancy's going to be reading from the book at a number of locations around the area over the next few months, but first joins us in the studio, Nancy Peacock. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
It is a pleasure. So tell us about that walk.
Well, yeah, I was kind of emptied out at the time. I was not writing, not sure I wanted to write anymore, not sure if it was leading me anywhere. You know, it's hard. And what I was doing instead was getting up in the dark and taking a 3-mile walk to the top of a hill and watching the sunrise. So I think there's a way in which my heart was just open and ready to hear something, even though I didn't know that. And that line just came out of nowhere.
What did you do then? You went home and wrote it down. Did it become a premise, or how long did it take for that to become?
It didn't take long, because that night I was watching Ken Burns' The West, his documentary The West, and I started wondering, as I was watching it, if there were any black Indians, and that just started taking off for me. I knew there were white Indians from a book I'd read years ago about children who'd been captured by the Comanche and assimilated into the tribe and became warriors. So that was the premise. And once I got the bit about him riding with the Comanche, I kind of worked it backwards to a cane plantation in Louisiana.
Tell us more about it and set it up a little for us.
Well, it opens in 1875 when Persimmon Wilson is about to hang for the murder of his former master. And he's just riding furiously to set the record straight because he's in love with a woman who white America, the people in Drunken Bride, Texas, where he's about to hang, believe she was the wife of Master Wilson. She was not the wife. She was passing for white for reasons of her own. He was in love with her, and he wants to set the record straight. And the whole book is about his odyssey from cane plantations, or the slave pens of New Orleans to the cane plantation, through the Civil War, to Comanche territory in Texas.
And I think it does a lot of things for us. Number one, you talked about the slave pens. I mean, this was a form of commodification. These plantations in the Deep South were a part of a huge global supply chain. We're not talking about sipping mint juleps on the porch here. These are absentee landlords that are, big investments. So we get the picture of a very different kind of plantation than what we might think was the southern plantation.
You know, every plantation was sort of a culture unto itself, and there were no national laws that told a slave owner how they could treat their slaves. So they could treat their slaves any way they wanted to, any way they deemed necessary.
Right.
So the Deep South, the cane plantation, the deep cotton plantations, those were about the worst place you could ever end up. And so that's where the term downriver comes from.
Right. We're talking about it. So now tell us a little bit about this, because the other, I think, insight and beautiful the theme that's handled beautifully is this question of cultural identity, which in other cultures is much more fluid and ambiguous than it is in ours. And you can become a former slave, a free man, and a Comanche. And all those things work pretty well in those communities, but the sort of the white European society is not having it.
Right. It's interesting because Chloe went through her own identity transformation. She went from house slave to allegedly white and then to Comanche. So each of my main characters goes through about 3 transformations in identity. I was about midway through writing the book when I realized this is a book about identity. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand that until I was, halfway there.
Well, the book opens, as you say, and he is in his jail cell awaiting a hanging. Maybe you can read an excerpt from the beginning of the book.
Well, I'd like to read an excerpt from when he's in the slave showroom. Now, this is a showroom. They often, there were auction blocks and there were showrooms in New Orleans. This was retail, and a slave was expected to actually sell himself as well. They had a lot of reasons to try and manipulate the sale. The grease the trader had smeared on my skin and polished in to make me gleam made me hot. My skin felt closed up, like my whole body was wrapped in tight leather on a sweltering day. All I could do was stand there, let the white men look, and answer their questions. "What's your age, boy?" Can you drive a buggy? Ever had chicken pox, whooping cough, measles? Where'd you live before? You got a wife? Would you like to come home with me, boy? We'd been told what to say. Old men were told to say they were younger. There were skills we didn't have that we were meant to claim. Our health was good, always. Scars and missing fingers were explained away, not as punishment, but as mishaps with machinery. The farther we came from, the less likely we were to run. The same for being unhitched. In answer to that last question, would you like to come home with me, boy? The only reply a slave could give was yes, sir. Yes, sir, I answered the gravelly voiced man who had prodded at me for the last hour. It was then I raised my head slightly and got my first look at Master Wilson, the man I would kill 10 years later.
Nancy Peacock, reading from her new novel, The Life and Times of Persimmon Wilson, reading at Flyleaf Books in Chapel Hill tonight and Orange County Library in Hillsborough tomorrow. We've got the information at our website. Tell me more about the research that you did. Lots of identities and lots of history here.
Lots of history. It was a great journey, the research. I love research, partly because when you go looking for a fact, you find all this other stuff sort of padded around the fact. Would never have a paid researcher because you wouldn't get that. So some of the books I read, Soul by Soul was a really important book for me. It's about the slave trade in New Orleans. I read about the Comanches. Empire of the Summer Moon by S.C. Gwynn was a really important book.
Tell us more about the slave trade in the Deep South and what you learned.
You know, I learned some interesting things. In this showroom, the slaves were dressed identically. They were sent outside, some of them, to walk in front of the showroom just to sort of be a window dressing. They were arranged by height. They were fattened up prior to market. They were fed bacon and butter and made to run laps around the pen. The grease was put on their skin to make them shine. They were expected to help sell themselves, and there was probably hell to pay if they didn't. But they had reason to manipulate that sale. You know, they wanted to. The slaves were, I imagine, always gauging who was going to be the best place or where was going to be the best place to land. They didn't have a lot of choices. And they might also try to manipulate a sale to stay with family.
A lot of information about those markets, less about the enslaved people who you're writing about, but there are slave narratives. And you research
I read
those.
A lot of slave narratives. I read a lot of the WPA interviews, which are a great source and free, I think, online. So it was nice to get those voices, the real voices. I'm always interested in what isn't being said. I hated history when I was growing up because I felt like I wasn't learning the real story. I knew there was something under there.
You could hear those long gaps, those silences,
the
13-minute gap in the tape that you were being fed in the classroom. Well, let me ask you a little bit more about that. I mean, it goes back to our previous segment, the kind of ideas that we have about an institution like slavery in this country. We think we know everything about it. What were some of the surprises for you, if any, and some of the details that really caught your imagination?
I think we do know about slavery. I think what we really don't know about is Reconstruction and the time after slavery because, you know, the slaves were given their freedom, but they weren't free people. I mean, when I was researching Texas after the Civil War, I found out that this is where the Black Codes came from. And the Black Codes are the laws that limited a freedman's movement. So a person could be picked up if they didn't have contract for labor coming spring. They could be picked up and thrown on a chain gang and put to work without pay. And that's where our chain gang system grew from. So it's kind of important, I think, to look at the whole trajectory of how we went from slavery to where we are now.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the subject of 13th and how.
Right.
And again, this is part of a global supply chain. It is a well-oiled machine getting this cane into sugar and into the other products that it was making. Global markets, you're not going to bring that thing to an end if you end slavery. So we've got to figure out a way to keep it going.
Right. And I think we're still trying to figure out a way to keep it going.
Still trying to figure out a way to keep that system going that benefits a few at the expense of the many. What about historical fiction for you? Because this is your second historical fiction novel. Apparently you like this. Sort of
apparently
thing.
I do. Yeah. You know, I was wrong. I do like history. What I like is stories.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize growing up in school that stories were connected to history. All I heard were dates and times and George Washington cut down the cherry tree. It just didn't make any sense to me. I think it's important to find out those particular stories. And again, you know, I didn't write the black story of America. I wrote one man's story.
Right. Well, the story that they didn't tell you is actually embedded in the details that they gave you, and of course the ones they left out. So there was a story, they just weren't telling you where that narrative came from.
Right. And I was a kid and I didn't know how to
and
find
how did
it.
We know? How do we know? But luckily there are writers and historians who have kind of helped us change the record a little bit. I wonder if I can ask you to read again.
Sure. This is Persimmon Wilson has written up to his involvement in the Civil War, and this is set in Drunken Bride in his jail cell. April 2nd, 1875. I have written well into the night. Outside my barred window, the pink light of dawn has given over to the white light of morning. Jack, my jailer, told me when he brought my breakfast that I am to be measured for my casket today. I will not be surprised if the newspaper man also pays me a visit, begging once again for my story. And, of course, the preacher might stop by, begging once again for my soul. I will tell everyone but the casket maker to go away. My hand is cramped, my forearm knotted with the effort of unceasingly moving pen across paper for 12 or more hours. I've called to Jack during the night for more ink, more paper, more fuel for my sputtering lamp. I have little time in which to live now, one full day and part of another in which to complete this account. I do not mind dying. Perhaps I even deserve it, although you hang me for the wrong crime. The death of Wilson is nothing. It made my heart glad to kill him. The person I have failed is Chloe, and I cannot die until I have completed her story. You call her now the most tragic figure of the frontier. A quote-unquote white woman, degraded not just by an Indian, but also by a black man. You say that Chloe was my slave, and I write this to disavow you of that thought. There is so much more truth to tell, and so little time left in which to tell it, and so I ask your forgiveness for the literary pace with which I write this section, this narrative that bridges my life as a field slave on a cane plantation along the Mississippi River to my life as Cuipanada Tamu, the Comanche warrior you are about to hang.
Nancy Peacock, her new novel, The Life and Times of Persimmon Wilson, should be at Flyleaf Books in Chapel Hill tomorrow in the Orange County Library in Hillsborough. Oh, no, she's going to be at Flyleaf tonight.
Correct.
And in Hillsborough tomorrow, and we have it right at our website. So there's a lot of research, including this notion of assimilation that is suggested, at least in the story. You talked about, you knew about white Indians, but were there black Indians, suggesting a different kind of assimilation into those bands that were here in North America. What did you find out about what the life was for an outsider who became part of a group?
Well, often when the white children were captured, they were sort of enslaved themselves until they stood up for themselves. This is just the Comanche. I don't know about the other tribes. This is just the Comanche. The Comanche, and probably most Indian tribes, were always looking to build up their base. You know, mm-hmm. They needed people, they needed warriors, they needed people who could reproduce, and they did raid and kidnap people. I wrote the entire book before I found out that the Comanche didn't really like black people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because, I think this is because it was the Buffalo soldiers who went after them after the Civil War. But I did find some instances of black people riding with the Comanche.
Was there ever any hesitation on your part in trying to embody the life of a black man or Comanche warriors, since you are neither?
Well, it's a sensitive issue, and I know that some people would not like that I've done it, and I wish I could apologize for all of the failures of white America, and I can't. I think none of us are 100% innocent in racism, and that's true for me. And I think what we're really trying to do is unlearn what we know. This was my effort to learn some things and unlearn some things. I think stories allow us to transcend our packaging. I think that's what we really need to look to stories for, and I think we all do need to transcend our packaging.
This is also a love story.
It's very much a love story. Yes, Percy is very much in love with a woman named Chloe, who ends up being passing as Master Wilson's wife. Master Wilson, throughout her time on Sweetmore, which is the plantation, is raping her and abusing her.
Is this a story as you wrote it? I mean, is it? It certainly holds up as a story in and of itself, and it's good reading. Do you feel that there are themes in here that have relevance for our time?
Oh, I'm sure there are. I think it's just so important for us to learn our history, where we've been. I feel like we obviously are here at a very volatile time in America, and I think partly it's because we've never really dealt with our past.
Are you, and a lot of reviewers also noted the way you play with time throughout this book, and you know, tell us about your choice of starting at the present and working back, or at least his present and working back.
Yeah, that first chapter, which I had the opening line, I've been to hangings before, but never my own, it just came to me. And, you know, so the first chapter kind of had to lead from that line. And I wrote it just instantly. All that just poured out of me. And Percy just kind of lays out what's going to happen. Or he tells the reader in advance a lot of stuff. And then he goes back into time to begin with his time in the slave pen. And occasionally I'll bring the narrative back to just remind the reader he's about to hang. I'm keeping track of that time and the time that he's traveling through in the narrative. So, you know, the gallows are being built. He's hearing that. Mm. The people are gathering for his hanging. He's hearing that.
You still taking those morning walks?
No, not so much. I think I've aged out of the morning walks.
Well, your next book is just going to have to come from something else. But this one's a delight. Nancy Peacock, thank you so much.
Thank you, Frank.
Nancy Peacock is talking about her novel, The Life and Times of Persimmon Wilson. And she will be reading at a number of locations, starting at Flyleaf Books tonight in Chapel Hill. And you can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Charlie Shelton Ormond, and Laura Pelliser. Robin Copley is our technical director. Brent Wolf is our news director. And North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.